Good evening. I asked a good friend for advice the other day, and he gave lots of good advice. And one bit of advice that he gave me was patience. Patience, Patrick, patience. And I thought that was pretty good advice. And knowing that this is a Dharma term that we practice with, I took a look at this practice of patience. Patience is one of the six paramitas, the six perfections. That bodhisattvas practice in their work to save all beings. Generosity, ethics, patience, vigor, meditation, and wisdom. So there's a complicated way to look at the word for these six perfections. I don't think you have to be perfect at all of those, but you should get pretty good at it. Is how I look at it. Robert Aitken wrote a nice book on these perfections called The Practice of Perfections. And he said that that these six practices come out of bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment, for the sake of all beings. They come out of that mind when that mind arises in us, and that bodhicitta, that mind of enlightenment for the sake of all living beings, that's arisen in all of us here. It's the mind that starts pointing us towards practice, starts pointing us towards this spiritual life. Out of this mind comes these six practices. A mind that is focused on enlightenment for the sake of all beings says, I think generosity is a big part of this practice. I think ethics and morality is part of how I might save all living beings. I think being patient would be a virtue to have in this practice, and so forth. It comes out of that mind. It's not a set of rules that you take on like the Cub Scout oath, you know, when you get the uniform, you take the oath and you practice the Cub Scout, the vows of being a Cub Scout. It's the other way around in Buddhism. We start wondering about how do I save all living beings? How can enlightenment save all living beings? And what emerges are these six practices. And patience is number three. They all come together, and they all kind of help each other out. I think we can have an individual practice of saying that, you know, I really need to look at my patience these days. That's kind of where I went. Since it was brought up to me, I should look specifically at patience and figure out how to practice patience. But they're all interconnected. You can't really have patience without wisdom or without meditation or without being generous. I hope Gene still has one of the posters that he's made when he's taught the six paramitas, this great poster with arrows kind of all leading to each other, a great tangled vine of interconnection, these six perfections, these six practices. You can't have one without the other. But I want to take a look at patience for a little bit tonight. We have a late start, and the wind is blowing. What did King Lear say? Blow, cheeks, blow. Imagining a big being blowing with cheeks full of air. So we want to get home before it gets too wet. So I'll just talk a little bit about patience. Coming here, a couple of us in the car couldn't decide who goes first. And I thought to myself, when I felt a little bit angry that the other person went before me in the intersection, I said, I should practice patience. I should practice what I preach. I'm on my way to the Zen Center to give a talk about patience. And I'm really miffed that that car went before me. It was my turn. It was clearly my turn. But that's one of the things that we do. Nothing teaches us patience more than our sitting. We do a lot of it in Zen. We're the just sitting school. And maybe a few of us have had the thought emerge of, you know, when is that bell going to ring? And then maybe in the next breath we've settled right down back into our seat again, and maybe even forgotten our impatience. So patience is something that we can interject when the mindfulness bell goes off that I'm frustrated or I'm angry or things aren't going the way I planned. Maybe that can be like a bell that goes off when those familiar lines pop into our heads and we can go, oh, this is where patience can come in and I can just settle right back into my body once again. I've seen frustration arise and now patience has come in and I'm seeing that frustration, that irritation, that anger just melt away. So that's what we can practice in, with our sitting, watching those impatient thoughts come up about the bell, and then just settle back into our back into our bodies. Patience is classically the antidote to anger. That when anger arises, you can slide patience in there and anger will dissipate. Now for that to happen, we have to get pretty good at understanding our anger. Buddhism talks a lot about anger. It's one of the three poisons. Greed, hate, and delusion. The hate part is the anger part. So if we're really these bodhisattvas that want to save all beings, we should really have a good look at the greed, hate, and delusion that arises in all of us. And understand how they particularly dwell in our bodies and minds. And when we get good at understanding it, when we can feel that heat rise in us, when that car zips through and it's my turn clearly, when we can feel that heat come up and the heart start beating, that can be the mindfulness bell. That, oh, let me just hold on tightly now to the steering wheel. Let me get back into this car rather than my mind that's following that guy out the window. Let me just settle back in. So we should understand our greed, hate, and delusion. In the book group last night, Awakening Together, we had a nice discussion on using the energy of anger, channeling it when it comes up, not to sort of not with the idea of pushing it away, but if anger comes up because of in our life. How can we channel that into something more productive? That maybe anger can be that bell that says, you know, now's the time to do something productive about this thing. In the class we were talking about racism. Now's the time to do something productive about racism. I'm really angry. How can I do something now? So it's not to be squashed, but we should get to know when anger can become, what was the term we used, toxic. When we can just keep going with it. And then it become, and keep ruminating about it. You know, Should I honk my horn at this guy ahead of me all the way to the Zen Center so he'll really know that he went, that he didn't take his turn, that he wasn't playing by the rules? You know, that's when it might be toxic. And so we should get to know our greed, hate, and delusion pretty well if we're taking this bodhisattva path for enlightenment in the service of saving all beings from their suffering. Robert Aitken says that that there's three parts, three forms of patience. One is gentle patience, gentle forbearance. And what's used again and again in the stage of gentle forbearance, like, for instance, the car going out of turn. You know, what's the term? No harm, no foul. He got through okay. There was no accident. My feathers are ruffled a little bit. And I'm back in my body now, and I can let that one go for the sake of harmony. We're all in this together. I want to get to the Zen Center. That other car wanted to get someplace else. It was the end of the day. We all want to just get home, and I can let that one go. And that's the gentle forbearance. Little slights. When you've waited in the line at the store a long time and the person in front of you just doesn't have the right change, and you feel that heat coming up, my gosh, and then you say, no harm, no foul, I can let this one go. I've come without the right change before. I've been there. And for the sake of harmony, you just let that one go. Then it gets the next level of forbearance or patience is endurance of hardships. A friend is now taking care of her husband who has a serious illness. And her email says, this is just what we do now. We've turned this corner and this is our life now. And it's a real hardship for both of them, but you just do the next thing. You do what needs to be done. Sickness, old age, and death is a sure thing for all of us. All of us are going to be meeting this, and it's fair. It's not unfair that we get old, that we get sick, and we die. It's just. It's fair. How do we meet that? We meet that with patience, just doing the next thing, just writing the doctor's appointment in the calendar, just arranging for a ride, just arranging for a trip to the store. Isan Dorsey was a Zen teacher in the 70s and 80s in San Francisco who died of HIV infection. He said that having AIDS was being alive. It wasn't unfair. It was being alive. He was quite a lively teacher. I never met him. There's a great book called Street Zen about his life. And I can imagine him saying this. I'm alive. AIDS is alive. We might think of those thousands of families that walked across Mexico from Honduras. They made this big decision in their life all together, as a community, as a family, that we need to change our life. And to do it is going to require, at the very least, this long walk and this long wait. Maybe they learned about the long wait when they got to the United States border, but they knew that they were in for hardship, and they just took one step at a time. And they're still enduring hardship for their families, for their community, to show the world the condition of many countries that are so hard to live in. And they just take that one step at a time, patiently, one hard step after the next. The third piece of forbearance and patience is acceptance of the truth, acceptance of reality. That's pretty closely connected to enduring hardships. I just have to walk across Mexico and then do the next thing. That's the reality of my life. And and on a smaller scale, that's what we do on the cushion. Is our thoughts, our life, petty arguments that we're reliving in our head, they just emerge, they just rise up in our quiet sitting, and we meet them. And we say, this is my life. I might not have been so patient with this argument when it first came up, but can I just sit here now and hold it a little differently, hold it in my heart without the heart pounding, without the red flush in my cheeks? Can I hold this argument a little differently while I sit here? This is my life. I want to work this out with that person. So accepting the truth, accepting reality. The Buddha practiced asceticism for 6 years before sitting under that Bodhi tree. He actually felt that imposing those hardships on yourself wasn't so useful. But Aitken says, I wonder if maybe it helped settle him. You know, maybe at least that period of life between being a prince in a castle, in a huge compound with servants and ceremonies, maybe it served a purpose between that period of Buddha's life and when he sat down under the Bodhi tree. Maybe it sort of helped settle him down. And Robert Aitken points out that the Buddha, you know, never said that was a waste of time. So Robert Aitken said maybe he remembered that, well, at the very least, it's no good to starve yourself. It's no good to wander in the cold without proper clothing in an attempt to deny this body. Maybe that doesn't lead to complete, perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. But Robert Aitken surmises that maybe it helped settle him down so that he could appreciate his body, so that he could appreciate the community of practitioners that he cultivated, that he joined during his 6 years of ascetic practice. And then I want to remind us of the events of this weekend, the Women's March on Saturday and the Martin Luther King March on Monday morning. Our great Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh had a lot to say about how to do marches. Of course, he did lots of marches in the 60s and the 70s for peace in his home country of Vietnam. And when he came to the West to teach, he taught a lot of us Westerners how to do these peace marches. And he said, you can't really do a peace march if you're angry, if you've got a lot of attitude about what's going on. So he taught about walking meditation, and encouraged us to think of these marches as a walking meditation, being totally in our body, with open heart, spacious mind, aware of the intimacy and harmony all around us. Be mindful that we can be pretty vulnerable with emotions. Us humans are emotional people. And not only do we have our own strong emotions, but we're really, really affected by emotions of others. That's emotion of compassion, where you're really feeling the emotions of other people. So we're all pretty vulnerable when we go to these marches, and can we steady ourselves as we march, and have patience and mindfulness be right there on the front burner. What was the name of his book? Peace in Every Step. Can we really say this step is peaceful? This step is peaceful. And can we use patience in our march to help liberate all beings? Teach them, or model for them, our peaceful walking, our intimacy with all beings. Maybe a lot of you heard over the Christmas holidays the story on NPR that was, I thought was very good. One of the news announcers on NPR, her name was Holly. I don't know her last name, but she said that her family was really into Christmas, and that's why she was named Holly. And her sister was named Joy Noel, and they really did Christmas up pretty well growing up, and Christmas was a big deal for the whole family and for the whole neighborhood. And she says that that now that everybody's grown up, they've all got different ideas. They've all got the politics of the world has sort of thrown a wrench into the intimacy of their family, and she was really kind of missing the Christmas spirit that they used to have because of all this. And then she told the story that I think might be a little bit of a myth, but because I've heard it many times, and you've all heard it, apparently, perhaps, in World War I, the Germans were very close to the British in the battle lines at Christmas time, and at some point during a quiet between the bullets on Christmas Eve, one of the German soldiers started singing Silent Night, And it just sort of kept the quiet going until both sides were singing. And then they just stopped fighting through Christmas. And they called it the Christmas truce. And unfortunately, on the 26th, the fighting started again. But everyone who participated and who survived the war to end all wars were very moved by each other's humanity. And this commentator was saying, you know, my parents listen to me on the radio. I hope they can hear my wish for our intimacy, for our harmony. I hope I can interject. This is me speaking. I hope I can interject patience and mindfulness and heart into this battle that we're having. And can we have a good Christmas this year? Can we have a family Christmas? Can we have an intimate Christmas this year? So that's how we bring patience into discord, into anger, into frustration. Shantideva was a great Buddhist teacher who wrote about the paramitas. All the good works gathered in a thousand ages, such as deeds of generosity and offerings to the Buddha, a single flash of anger can shatter them. No evil is there similar to anger, no austerity to be compared with patience. Steep yourself, therefore, in patience, in various ways, insistently. Those tormented by the pain of anger never know tranquility of mind. Strangers they will be to every pleasure. They will neither sleep nor feel secure. Steep yourself, therefore, in patience, in various ways, insistently. So those are a few verses. We have just a couple of minutes. Any thoughts on the marches coming up and the posture of a bodhisattva in such a gathering? Any stories about just settling back down into the body and letting that one go? I think so. I think the universe is telling us something else. It's saying, let's get on with this. Miles to go before we sleep. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. May the merit of our sitting practice that has pointed again and again, minute after minute, second after second, to our patient body and mind, help us in our practice of complete, perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Beings are numberless, I now disable them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow.
them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.